You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Wednesday to you. We appreciate you being with us. We've got a full show today. Gino Toretta from Touchdown Radio will join us to talk about this weekend's matchup between Arkansas and LSU. Christina Long will be in studio a little bit later as we continue to talk about football. And we'll end the show with Anthony Christensen, and we recap what happened at SEC Basketball Media Day with John Calipari yesterday. But first, Gino Toretta, former Heisman Trophy winner. He calls games on Touchdown Radio, does a great job of that, and he'll be in Fayetteville this weekend for the Arkansas-LSU game. Gino, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, glad to be here. Looking forward to my trip.
Hey,
maybe even mixing a little Herman's, you know?
Yeah. It seems like that's a popular spot for the visiting broadcaster. It seems like every week when we have a broadcaster on, they say, I'm looking forward to getting back to Herman's. So you're not alone there.
Can't beat that big T-bone.
You guys have been kind of rolling hot dice this year. I mean, I look at your broadcast schedule, and you've been to some really entertaining games. Started off with Georgia Tech, Florida State in week one. You were at that Georgia-Kentucky game, and then just the last few weeks, Miami, Cal, Penn State, USC, even OU Auburn was a pretty good game with some late game dramatics. Maybe you're bringing another late game, a fun game to Fayetteville.
I would say this: college football delivers every single week. I don't know if we know which week it's going to deliver or which game that's going to deliver. We've been fortunate to have some great games. I think obviously the surprise, week one. I don't think many people gave Georgia Tech a chance against FSU, but obviously they had different thoughts and took care of FSU. And then, Miami Cal was a late one. That was that Pac-12 after dark. I think it was about 2 in the morning my time by halftime. So I was a little, Brett and I were a little tired on that. But and then Penn State USC, USC really kind of handled Penn State the entire first half, and then, man, Penn State came storming back, and we saw a tight end throw his hat in the ring for Heisman after 16 or 17 catches that Hunter had. So it's been great, and college football is the best sport in the land as far as I'm concerned.
For those who don't know, Brett Dolan is also on the Touchdown Radio call. Brett obviously does a lot of work here in Fayetteville with Razorback Sports Network. Let's talk about LSU for a minute, because you had their game against UCLA a few weeks back. What did you see that day in Baton Rouge, and do you see a different-looking football team right now?
Well, I think what I saw was an unbelievable, they put an early kick on, we know the South, and we know how hot it is. Mm-hmm. And, I think 75% of the fans on the east side of that stadium left after the first quarter. It was so hot. People were dropping out, and I thought they struggled. LSU did a little bit, early in the game before kind of pulling away as UCLA kind of welted in the heat. They defensively, they're very aggressive, but I think at times they've also given up some big plays. Offensively, Nussmeier has been able to make enough plays. I don't know if they have the skill on the outside that they've had in the past. Maybe it's just a little bit of inexperience on the outside at the wide receiver position. But when you go from a guy like Neighbors and I don't know, probably the five best guys in the NFL are all from LSU, dating back to Burrow. So I don't know if they have that kind of talent or experience, but they're good, and they continue to get better. I know, we talked about Penn State, USC, and USC sure were rooting hard for them to win the rest of their games, because it makes that loss or the win against LSU even bigger, and trying to get in the 12-team playoff at the end. But listen, their LSU is always going to have athletes, some of the best in the Southeastern Conference. They are always going to be, I would say, the all get off the bus. You watch that team get off the bus, or you watch them warm up, and you're like, wow, look at that kid. I mean, just talent, speed, size. So they're gonna have all that, and I think it's, that's why they've been, one of the best teams, or in the mix always in the SEC as one of the top teams in the conference.
I wanted to ask you about Garrett Nussmeier. What do you think about him as a quarterback? And when you've got a team like LSU that's going to take so many vertical shots down the field. It seems like probably 10 to 15 real deep shots that they're going to take during the course of a game. I wonder how much pressure you think that puts on a defense.
Well, it puts a lot. I mean, I think that if the defense is going to pressure and you know the other team's, you know, going to take shots down the field, then obviously the risk of giving up the big play and man coverage is always there. I think I played with Garrett's dad in the World League, Doug, over in Dusseldorf, Germany. So, you know, he's obviously been around the game. He knows the game inside and out. Reading coverages, he seems like he's, you know, he's sharp. And he takes some chances with the ball, but I think they're more calculated calculated chances. I'd probably say Brian Kelly wants to be a little bit more balanced in his offense. But, you know, listen, as far as LSU's going to go, as far as the quarterback's going to take him, Garrett's not going to run and scramble like Jaden did a year ago. But, you know, he's going to get him in the right play. And I think he's fun to watch as just a fan of the game.
I think they've only given up two sacks this year and like 255 dropbacks. What did you see from their offensive line?
Well, I think a lot of that, you know, when I look at sacks, a lot of that is on the quarterback. And you know, Garrett being around the game, he knows when there's pressure coming. He knows when they're going to blitz. And if something's not there, just throw it away. And I think, you know, on the flip side, Arkansas has been hurt by maybe a quarterback that, you know, he's new, he's transferred, so he's not seeing things as fast, or just throw the ball away. Sometimes it's better to be second and 10 than to try to make a play and take a sack. So I think that's a combination of an offensive line that's played pretty good, but I think it's also credit on the quarterback of just getting rid of the ball. I mean, we did Miami Cal, Cam Ward probably took six or eight shots that he, in my eyes, he shouldn't have taken. He was trying to, you know, hold the ball, and then you throw it away at the last second, you take hits. You know, all you need is one of those hits to knock you out of the game. So I think that that's a credit to the quarterback, you know, and I think that as Coach Petrino gets his young quarterback in tune with his offense, maybe just throwing the ball away a few times and then it, your offensive line stats look a little better on the pressures.
I want to ask you about Arkansas, but I want to pause for a second while this is on my mind. You've got a Heisman vote because you won the award. As you evaluate the Heisman Trophy throughout the season, what are you looking for? And when do you really start zoning in on players who you think are legitimate candidates?
I'd probably say the end of this month, you know, late October, early November. I think that I want to see players that perform in those big games, the big conference matchups. I think that we'll go back, you know, listen, we all remember Geno Smith's September at West Virginia was absolutely phenomenal, and everybody's like, he's going to win the Heisman Trophy. Mm-hmm. And you know, as a winner, as a voter, it's like you can't win the award in September. You can put yourself in the conversation, and I think that, you know, in our day and age of media and, hey, I want to be first, this guy's going to win the Heisman. People say, oh, this guy's going to win the Heisman, instead of saying, you know what, let's let the conference schedule play out a little bit and see how these guys perform against the best in their division. Normally, I try to vote with, you know, seeing most of the guys and it with my own eyes. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I would say the influence of a performance in front of me, like with my own eyes, where, yep, I've seen 60 minutes of a guy just light up another team, a la last year. Jaden Daniels, we did Missouri, LSU at Missouri. And I was like, wow, is this kid unbelievable? I mean, it was both quarterbacks played lights out, and he just played a little bit better. You know, I think that kind of helps solidify a guy having a chance to win the Heisman. But I don't necessarily, you know, start even thinking about this stuff until, you know, end of this month and even November. And sometimes maybe it's down to two guys playing in a conference championship game that are in different conference championship games, and you see how that performance was. But it's big performances and big games where there's a lot of pressure on all the team and the players as individuals.
Do you ever foresee a time that a quarterback or a running back, you know, moving forward? I know Charles Woodson won the award and Devontae Smith won it a few years ago, but it's mostly been a quarterback running back award. Do you ever foresee a time when, you know, maybe there's a great linebacker or there's a great offensive tackle that might be able to win it?
I would say if you know, in the age of specialization, I mean, it, you know, nickel, the defensive backs really would be the player. You know, it'd be like, you know, a guy, you know, I can remember Dorsey, the D tackle at LSU, was just a beast until he got hurt. You know, it's got to be somebody like a Warren Sapp or Ndamukong Suh.
Yep.
But they, you know, they're on the field less. They don't, you know, unless you know the game and you're watching them every single play, it's going to be hard. And then I think with Woodson having a chance to win it, or even Tim Brown as a return guy, it's got to be that extra thing. And for Woodson, it was, you know, they'd line him up at wide out. He'd make a few catches. They put him in at returner. So that helped. I mean, I got to be honest, the performance I saw by the tight end of Penn State last week's the best performance I've seen all year. I mean, there's no question. Like, if you watch that and you're like, wow. I mean, he snapped the ball. He threw a pass. You know, he ran ball. I mean, touchdown catch. It was an absolutely unbelievable performance. The question is can Penn State target him 10 to 15 times a game the rest of the season? Or when he plays Ohio State and those kind of Michigan and those games, does he have those kind of games? And I think if Hunter does, you know, he's in the mix for best player and performer, but you got to do it week in and week out. It's just the quarterback he touches the ball every snap, and you know, the running back has more of a chance, obviously, touching it more than anybody else.
Do you know your name is in the Arkansas Media Guide?
It should be. I threw a 99-yard touchdown pass, so I know that nobody's beaten that record. Yeah, that was my first start my junior year. We went to Little Rock. Man, what a great you know, great environment. Fans were going crazy. That was early. I think it was 0-0. And
I think it was your first play.
We came off the field and we had the ball. You know, we're backed up inside the one, and Coach Erickson gave me the play, and it was like play action, everybody go deep. And normally the read is inside out. So play action, linebackers bite, hit it to the first slot receiver right behind the linebackers. And, you know, I made the fake and I looked up, and Horace Copeland, who was one of the fastest guys on our team, he's 6'3", ran a 4.31 high jump, 7 feet in high school. And I was like, out of the corner of my eye, I was like, wow, he's past the DB. And I knew it was a single safety, and I was like, okay, nobody's catching him. And I mean, I threw it, got lit up when I was throwing it. And yeah, that was, I knew nobody was catching it. He could have ran for a couple hundred yards, been Forrest Gump. But yeah, that was a good memory.
Could have ended up at the Little Rock Zoo. 99-yard touchdown pass. Yeah, the longest passing play ever against Arkansas. Let's ask you about the Razorbacks. What have you seen from them in studying for this game this weekend?
Well, I think they're stout. They're, you know, they have all the weapons to win. I think that, you know, it's been commented on, documented. You turn the ball over, you lose the turnover battle, you lose the game. And that's what it's come down to. I think that even when I would probably say maybe they didn't play their best or a great offensive game against Tennessee, they didn't turn the ball over. And that's, you know, listen, these games come down to turnovers now, and it's with the clock changes in college football, these teams have gone from running 80 to 100 plays a game back down to 65 was like when I was playing. So the clock does not – you do not get – a lot of opportunities with the ball, especially if you're not converting third downs or if you turn the ball over. And I think that, to me, it's they play clean. They can play with anybody in the country. And listen, Bobby Petrino is very good friends with Dennis Erickson, who is my head coach. A lot of their offense schematically is a lot of the same things we did at Miami. You know, I watched one play against Tennessee early where it was kind of funny because the 49er offense on the West Coast of Bill Walsh released four receivers to one side of the formation, but really the play is going to the opposite end of the formation. And all Coach Petrino did was motion across the formation. The defense shifts to the motion, everybody comes back across the field and the tight end just sneaks out and nobody covers. I mean, it's, you know, a 3-yard pass, but it's yards after catch. And those are kinds of things when you keep the game simple and, you know, maybe it looks exotic to the defense, but as a quarterback, you're just like, man, this is like taking candy from a baby. It's like motion across the formation. Everybody's looking one way and you just throw it the other. And I think that, you know, as your young quarterback gets, you know, more in tune and he's learning a new language, he'll be just fine.
Arkansas and LSU, I think their last four games have been decided by a field goal, and it's always been a tight series. Is there something about when two teams get together, they just kind of bring the best out of each other?
Well, I would say this. I think that anytime you're in the Southeastern Conference, I mean, we learned with Vandy beating Alabama for the first time in whatever, 60 tries against a top five team that Vanderbilt mm-hmm. never did. You know, we always said the other team's on scholarship too. And I think that, you know, these teams have always had talented players. And I think that, you know, obviously, you know, there's no divisions anymore, but hell, this is an old SEC West matchup where, you know, you're trying to fight like heck to get the SEC championship game. And I think that that's what it is. You realize, you know, hey, this is a big game. I mean, mm-hmm. LSU is one of the top teams and you're going to go out there and perform your best. You're going to go out there, maybe work a little extra harder. I mean, you know, the scout team guys are watching, you know, LSU's offense and trying to do what Nussmeier and his mates are doing. And, you know, it's kind of the old Monday night. You know, I think that's what it is. I think it's both of these teams realize, listen, they want to be, you know, in the past they wanted to win the West, and now you just want to be one of the two best teams and getting that championship game.
Gino, you've been great with your time. Hope you enjoy Herman's this weekend. Your steak over there. You're coming back to Fayetteville for the Texas game.
Yeah, we
have
right? Texas. So we get the LSU game and then Texas, and then, you know, listen, if Arkansas can win this one, that's going to be just huge. Texas keeps mounting, I mean. Listen, it's SEC. It's like every week it just keeps getting bigger and bigger as the season goes on.
And when you win, it makes the games bigger. And Arkansas beating Tennessee certainly, you know, did a number this week. Appreciate you being here.
Yep, thank you.
All right, thank you, Gino Toretta. When we come back, Christina Long will join me. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. Christina Long with me now. We want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. We're having a very lively discussion during the break about what's the greatest rivalry trophies in college football. Got Arkansas and LSU this weekend for the boot. I don't know exactly how many times they played for it. I think 1996 or 97 was the first time that this trophy was given out for Arkansas and LSU. And I will give them credit that outside of Arkansas and LSU, or outside of Arkansas and Louisiana, some people know this game by the Battle of the Boot. But I had a radio show host ask me this the other day. They said, where do you think that this rivalry game rank, like the rivalry trophy ranks? And I said, I don't think I'd put it in the top 10 or 15. And as I looked through, you know, and I mean, that was just kind of off the top of my head. I was thinking about, okay, what are the games I know about? I know you've got the Floyd of Rosedale between Minnesota Iowa. You've got the Paul Bunyan Zacks, which is Minnesota and Wisconsin. You've got the Little Brown Jug between Michigan and Minnesota, the Old Oaken Bucket between Purdue and Indiana. And as I kept kind of going through it, it's like, yeah, I mean, this may even be down like further in the 20s, the 30s. So you give it some credit in that it's got longevity. Some people know about it outside the state. But yeah, I just feel like there's a lot more trophies out there that are, you know, recognizable with the games. And the other thing is, you know, we were talking about it. This thing is so dadgum big that, I mean, it usually takes like two or three different offensive linemen to kind of carry it around and get it off the field. It's just you're not your normal trophy.
Yeah, it's really not. And I think, I mean, if we're talking exclusively about the coolness of the trophy, like, it looks cool, but you're right. It's a difficult one to, you know, hoist in.
Massive.
Yeah, it's kind of a team effort to lift it up, you know? But at least you can lift it up. We were talking a little bit off air about how the Battle Line Rivalry Trophy, you can't lift it. Like, it, I mean, I guess maybe they have, but it would take even more. I mean, I can't remember how much it weighs, but it's something ridiculous. It's not really made to be lifted. But so this one, I mean, it's pretty. I think it's cool. I don't think it's like one of the better ones in college or in the SEC even. It's funny, all the really unique and iconic trophies that you were running through, it's funny that they're all in the Big Ten.
A lot of them are.
Yeah, almost all of them are Big Ten. They just tend to have, yeah, kind of the quirkier, weirder ones.
You're lucky. I've got all of the details here about all the different trophies. I actually wrote a story about this a few years ago. The Golden Boot, 4 feet high, 24 karat gold, 175 pounds.
Wow. Oh, that's a lot more than I thought.
175 pounds. The Missouri Trophy. Sorry, didn't mean to offend the Mizzou grads in the room. Missouri Trophy, 52 inches tall, so slightly taller than the boot, 180 pounds.
Okay. They're closer than I thought they were, but still, like, yeah, yeah.
And just for fun, a water jet machine cut a 90-pound, 2.5-inch thick outline of the states from 1,200 pounds of steel, a process that took 40 consecutive hours for the Arkansas-Missouri trophy. You know, Arkansas-Missouri, when the winner of that game, they, like, just wheel the trophy off the field.
Right, because you can't pick
it
up.
It's so big.
Yeah, yeah. It's, like, dangerous if you pick it up. If somebody drops a corner of it and bops you on the head, you're done.
Remember when Arkansas won the Miracle on Markham? You've got Sean Andrews and Jason Peters carrying the trophy off.
Yeah.
I mean, these are, like, massive, massive individuals. And they can barely get that thing up, you know, maybe a foot off the ground.
Yeah.
That's how big that trophy is. You know, so I don't know. I mean, it's a cool rivalry trophy. I asked Hunter Yurchek last month, like, what happens to the rivalry trophies when these teams don't play each other anymore every year? They're going to play Missouri every year, much to the chagrin, I think, of a lot of people. But LSU, they'll play them this year, and they will play them next year down in Baton Rouge. And then after that, we don't know how frequently that game's going to get played. I know it's not going to be an annual game. And so, you know, what happens to the trophy? Is it still, like, do they play for it even if they only play them every 3 years or so? Texas A&M, that's a trophy game. But that trophy, from the way I understand it, was created by the Jones family and or the Cotton Bowl, who hosts the game at AT&T Stadium. And I think when they played off campus in the first couple of years that A&M was in the league or the COVID year, I don't think they played for that trophy.
Really?
So I wonder, like, does that trophy, does it just – like, where does it go?
Right.
Does A&M just keep it? Do they put
Maybe.
It up in there, but it never gets played for again? Does it go back to Dallas?
Right. I don't know. It's kind of like how we talked briefly about how a while ago about how is the Southwest Classic ever going to be, and I think the answer is no, but is the Southwest Classic going to become a game that's played between two different teams? Is that, you know, is it always going to be, was it meant to be just Arkansas, Texas A&M? Like, is that no longer going to be the thing? I think the answer is, like, I don't think they're going to reuse that for any other teams. But we had talked about that when we were, you know, a while back when we were discussing that last game at AT&T Stadium about is that, could they have Arkansas play some other team or A&M play some other team or whoever, you know, some other old Southwest Conference teams meet. But I don't think that's in the cards.
Maybe they can give the trophy to the Cowboys. I don't think they're going to win any other trophies anytime soon, the way things are going down there. Did you see Jerry Jones's?
I saw, yeah, that he, like, tried to fire. So do those people work for him?
No,
they work for
a station that has a rights agreement with the Cowboys.
I gotcha.
And then he has, as part, I guess, of that entire rights agreement, he and Stephen Jones and maybe some others within the organization, they have weekly radio segments
gotcha.
On that station.
Okay.
So Can he fire them? I don't know. I guess he could theoretically end the rights agreement with that radio station, but man, what a...
So it's not like if Sam Pittman got on his show at the Catfish Hole and said and threatened to fire Chuck.
Wouldn't that be something?
That'd
be something. Chuck, I don't like the questions you're asking. So we got Arkansas LSU. Any other trophies that we ought to mention?
$5 bits of broken chair.
What the heck is that?
That's a recent one. That's Minnesota, Nebraska.
How many trophies does Minnesota have?
It's so many.
Do they have a trophy every time they go on the field?
Honestly, maybe. That one came up. That one kind of was born out of like an internet thing.
$5 bits of broken chair.
Yeah. I think it's unofficial. It's listed on the Wikipedia page for college football trophy games. It is listed, but I don't know if it is officially played for. But they do I think they've had it on the field, and it's kind of like it's got a fundraising tie-in. It's very interesting. If you don't know about the $5 bits of broken chair, you should look it up.
Because I found a picture right here.
It's very interesting. It came out of like sort of like a Twitter thing. It was very, grassroots fan born, which is really fun. That's so much more fun than a sponsored rivalry where you say we've got to have a trophy and cook one up in marketing,
Mm-hmm. I have a vote.
Okay, what's up?
I like the Egg Bowl trophy because it's almost always a good game, and it's always on Thanksgiving, and there's not a whole lot of other games on, so you're like watching football with your family, and there's Ole Miss, Mississippi State playing each other.
It's the best.
I love that game.
And there's always, something crazy is going to happen in the Egg Bowl every year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like the other thing about the
player scores a touchdown and then pretends to pee on the field and they lose.
Iconic. I feel like the other thing about the boot is I don't think LSU cares about that game the way Arkansas
does. No, I don't
either. And so it's hard
to look at
the
way their players react when they win the game versus the way Arkansas's players react when they win the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not not the same.
I just don't think, I texted my friend that went to LSU and I was like, does LSU they don't consider Arkansas a rival. And they said, no, more Alabama, Ole Miss, Texas A&M. Like, Arkansas is pretty far down the list for them.
Well, this is obviously the authority. I did a Google search, and the first thing that popped up was a website called cfbselect.com, the 25 best rivalry trophies in college football. The Golden Boot's not here.
Yeah. I like
but
it.
But there are a lot of Big Ten rivalry trophies.
Yeah.
I
like the trophy. I like the game. When I was a kid growing up as a Razorback fan, this was like the game we looked forward to. I think
it was always at the end of the year.
Yeah,
which made
exactly.
And a lot of times it was a game that had SEC championship game implications. Like a team maybe had already clinched its – I think about 06 Arkansas. They're undefeated in the SEC, and they're in the national championship discussion at the end of the year. And LSU comes in and beats them in Little Rock. And that ends their only bid they've ever had for an undefeated SEC season and really ended their bid for a national championship game.
Yeah.
And there have been a lot of games like that. I mean, I remember leaving the stadium in Baton Rouge in 07 thinking, it was like, I'd never seen Baton Rouge like that. It was like a bomb had been dropped. It was so eerily quiet in Baton Rouge because everybody who was at that game thought they had lost their chance at winning a national championship. Mm-hmm. Now, the next week, couple of things happened and they were able to get back in and they win a title as the first two-loss national champion. But that night it felt like Arkansas had really spoiled something special for them.
Yeah, it's been an interesting game. I think when you ask different generations about games they remember the most or who they feel like, which team they hate the most or which team they think is the biggest rival, I think a lot of people my age that are Arkansas fans would have LSU up there or would have LSU on the list. Whereas I don't think that's the case for young LSU fans.
And there's not a lot of rivalry trophies, by the way, in the SEC. I mean, Blake mentioned the Egg Bowl. You've got the Golden Hat between OU and Texas, which now that's
SEC
just new
trophy,
to the league. We were talking that, Tennessee and Kentucky used to play for this beer barrel, and then it got taken away about 25 years ago when a couple of players got killed in a drunk driving accident. Outside of that, there's this Finocchi or Georgia and Florida.
Oh, I didn't know they play for a
They play for a
I guess
a
maybe
giant
I did
or.
Know that. Maybe I did know that. But yeah, I feel like there's a lot of
games.
I need
to learn how to say that word, like Uyongalale or Yamaliaba.
I feel like there's a lot of games where you know the game and you don't necessarily realize there's a trophy involved. Like when I was looking through this Wikipedia list, there's so many that I've never heard of.
I mean,
but
Georgia,
there are games
Florida.
That I know about. Yeah.
What do we know that as?
The cocktail party.
Party.
Yeah. I had no idea they played. Nobody calls it like the battle for the ore,
Well, actually. So. People are holding signs here that says war for the oars.
Oh, that's fun. I like that.
Little did we know. Yeah. All right, you want to talk about this game?
Sure.
All right, Arkansas LSU, Saturday night. We talked to Gino Toretta earlier, gave some great insights. What do you see when you think about this game, and how much do you think Talen Green and his availability and health plays into how you think about the matchup?
Well, it's got to play in a lot. I mean, if they don't have Talen Green, it's a totally different game. Or if he's not 100%, or if he has to leave the game early, whatever. That changes things. I think, you know, Sam Pittman said after Tennessee, you know, Talen Green is our starter for a reason. Malachi Singleton, he did what he needed to do. He did great in Tennessee. He helped them win the game, whatever. But there's, you know, Talen Green is starter for a reason. And I don't think that means Malachi Singleton is bound to fail if he has to play, but it's obvious it gets much harder. You would expect it to. That's what happens when a backup quarterback comes in the game. So I think Green, you know, Green's health is the biggest question. I expect that he'll be fine. It sounded like Pittman was very optimistic about it. He kind of threw in at the end of his answer, like, we'll know more Tuesday or Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
But he sounded genuinely optimistic. I'm not surprised that he didn't want to say definitively either way. But, yeah, I mean, I expect Green to be available, but they have to do a better job. You know, they have to keep him from worsening the injury or suffering another one. We've been talking all season about how we've been kind of waiting for that to happen because of the way Green plays and the way that they've struggled to protect him sometimes. So they've got to keep him clean.
The thing that I think is the biggest question for me is how can Arkansas, because they've been on for 2 weeks, can they – find what they had against Tennessee again. And then for LSU, how much does the momentum – basically it comes down to momentum. Does Arkansas's momentum continue when they've had an off week? And then for LSU, does the momentum carry over from the Ole Miss game? Or is there a little bit of a hangover effect, the fact that they've, you know, they won this type of game just last week, and now they got to get up for another one.
Right. They're coming off that, you know, what you would call maybe an emotional win. And anytime you have an overtime game, a thriller like that, it takes a lot out of a team, I think. And, yeah, Arkansas had that but had the benefit of the week off. So, I mean, yeah, I think Arkansas should benefit a lot from having that week. We talked about it on the show last week, I think, where it's great to get healthy, but it's also good to take a break coming off a win like that so that you can truly put that to bed and turn the page to the next game. Because, I mean, we were talking about the Tennessee game for a week afterward. I'm sure they were thinking about it. You know, they don't want to rest on their laurels, but that's one of the highlights of a lot of those guys' college careers probably. And that's something that they're going to think about. But they can't rest on that. They have to look ahead. And so I think taking that week off probably helped with that.
I'm struggling as much as I have all year in picking this game.
Because I haven't made up my mind yet.
I haven't made it. It's due by the end of the day. It's due by the end of the day that we've got to have our predictions in for the weekend. But I'm struggling with this. I can see LSU winning maybe bigger than people expect. I can see Arkansas winning. And then I keep coming back to the fact that every time it seems like these two teams play, it's just really, really tight.
I can't believe it's been a three-point game in the last four years in a row. I didn't realize that until I looked it up yesterday, and I can't believe that.
Yeah, I can. I was there.
Yeah.
I've seen them.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm struggling to pick this
game. I haven't made my mind up. I tentatively put Arkansas, but I was going to, like, revisit it. I'm not sure. I'm really not sure.
I don't like to take history into account when I'm trying to pick a game of today, but I can't help but think that Arkansas's never beaten two top 10 teams in a row.
Yeah, that's true.
And
but they haven't played two top 10 teams in a row that often, right?
Yeah, I think this will be the 17th time.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm talking about in the history of the program, dating back to 1957, the first time it happened when they played Texas A&M and Ole Miss.
Gotcha.
Back-to-back weeks. They've never beaten two top 10 teams in a row.
Wow.
So
yeah, I mean, it's an uphill climb for sure. I mean, it won't be easy if they're going to do it.
I think there's only been one Arkansas team that's beaten two top 10 teams in the same season, and that was the 64 national
champion.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. If Arkansas wins this game, national championship?
Yeah. probably not. But they can celebrate 60 years
since
their last national
championship. No, absolutely. It would still be a huge, huge win, of course.
All right, Christina, thank you. When we come back, Anthony Christensen's going to join us. He's on his way back from Birmingham and SEC Basketball Media Day. We'll talk to him about what John Calipari and the Arkansas players had to say there, but first, another word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, We are ShopCart. We are Design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They are committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. SEC Basketball Media Days were yesterday. John Calipari, he was kind of the star of the show. We expected that would be the case. And Anthony Christensen was there for Whole Hog Sports. He joins us now, driving back from Birmingham, somewhere in Mississippi. Anthony, were you impressed with my geography knowledge of I-22?
I was. I mean, to be frank, my road knowledge isn't all that great. Even like back home in the St. Louis area, I'll get lost just kind of driving around. So it doesn't take a lot to impress me, but you just kind of rattling, you know, Holly Springs and New Albany off, just and basically pinpointed exactly where I was.
Well, you did.
I was impressed.
You didn't know where you were. I was trying to figure out where you were. So, but now we know. Now we know. Hey, we got a lot of clips that we're going to play from John Calipari's time at SEC Media Day yesterday. This was just his opening statement.
This is an adventure. My wife and I are excited about it. Going to be some work. Going to be stuff we're going to have to do. But I'm excited to let's go get the hands on it. Let's do this. Got a good group. Really a lot of good stuff going forward. So
that's John Calipari, his opening statement at SEC Basketball Media Day. This was held at the Grand Bohemian Hotel in Mountain Brook, Alabama. That's a suburb of Birmingham. Anthony, everybody wanted to talk to him about Kentucky and why he left Kentucky. For a lot of people, it was the first time that they've had an opportunity to interview him in person since April when he made this decision. He didn't want to talk about any of that yesterday.
No, he didn't. I don't know if he's just kind of tired of talking about it or you know, whatever the case may be, but he shot down that question pretty quickly and was basically just kind of, you know, hey, I want to talk about, you know, what I'm doing, not what I did, kind of. I guess that was kind of his approach to the day, which I guess is fair. Obviously, you know, not everybody in there has gotten the same access we have just because obviously we're, you know, in Arkansas, we're talking to him and, you know, whenever he's available to talk. But, you know, it made sense in my mind to that, you know, obviously he didn't want to talk about something he's kind of rehashed a few times and, you know, wanted to focus on what he's got, you know, in Fayetteville, which I thought he did give some pretty good insights on over the course of his, I believe it was 20-minute session.
I think people who are in positions of leadership, they don't want to talk about the past. They want to be very forward-thinking. Like, you know, everybody's talking right now about this Jerry Jones thing and the blow-up that he had with the radio people in Dallas. I think that these type of people, they are introspective, and they will go back and they'll analyze, hey, what did I do wrong here and there? But they don't want to talk about it. They want to be very forward-thinking. And that's kind of what I thought about yesterday when I heard Calipari say that. You know, it's like, hey, that's 6-7 months behind me now. I'm focused on this team. I'm focused on this year. And if you want to talk about Kentucky, go pull up some of the quotes because I've talked about it. I'm done talking about it. I'm ready to move forward.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And like you said, he seems ready to move forward, excited to talk about the future. I know he's constantly kind of said, you know, he doesn't have a magic wand to make everything great right away. Though obviously he and, you know, a lot of other people have set the bar high and have high expectations for the new season. But, you know, you could definitely tell that he's ready to, you know, talk about Arkansas and what he's doing at Arkansas as opposed to Kentucky and why he left Lexington.
He was asked about Kentucky and then he pivoted and he had this to say.
So yesterday, I probably shouldn't tell you this, but I did a COVID test. because I thought if I had COVID, I wouldn't have to come. My wife called me and said, not happening, you're going tomorrow. So I've been to a lot of them, and it's something we have to do to really, and they were really important before because we had to promote our league in basketball. No one looked at us. Now all of a sudden, we're like it in basketball too. So yeah, it's not really changed, but the importance of it has always been, let's get the word out. Let's brag about each other, brag about the coaches and the players, and really tell the story of what this has become. The investment people make in basketball has changed drastically on the campuses, drastically. Facilities, home court advantage, the investment that they've made in recruiting and travel and all the things that make the league special across the board, these schools have made that kind of commitment.
I don't think he was joking about the COVID test.
I wouldn't be surprised. No, that was a funny little moment. Got some chuckles in the room, but I can see there being at least some truth to it for sure.
I don't think he likes going to SEC Media Day. I really don't. I think that, you know, this is kind of like one of those Marshawn Lynch, I'm here so I don't get fined type deals.
Yeah, I mean, they do kind of, and this isn't just, you know, the SEC, it kind of follows the same thing. It was the same thing at the Missouri Valley when I was covering the Valley and everything along those lines. It's just kind of, I mean, you know what you're going to get at these Media Day events for the most part. And so, I mean, they can obviously get a little repetitive. So you kind of have to find a way to, you know, find a story that not everybody else is going to write, which I mean, I hope I did. But I guess that's just speaking from a reporting perspective. But yeah, especially from a coach's perspective, I could see how it could maybe be a little, I guess, maybe annoying.
Maybe.
But yeah.
I'm interviewing John Calipari tomorrow at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club, and I'm sitting here trying to come up with questions that I feel like are going to be unique, and he hasn't been asked, because I feel like, you know, a lot of times when we hear him talk, number one, he's going to pivot and talk about what he wants to talk about. And
yes, absolutely.
The other thing is, you know, we've heard him speak in public now enough, whether it be press conferences or, you know, he had the event in Little Rock back in, I think, May. He was in El Dorado in May. We've heard him, you know, publicly half dozen times or so since he's taken the Arkansas job. And he's recycled the same material a lot. That I feel like that is my challenge tomorrow, to see if I can get him out of recycling the same material.
Yeah, it needs to be like a good comedian. You don't want to use the same jokes over and over, or the act gets stale. So, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what new things we can get out of him. But yeah.
We mentioned this yesterday. The AP poll is out. Arkansas is number 16. Calipari was asked about Kansas being ranked number one. The Jayhawks come into Bud Walton Arena next Friday.
Juice to it that they're number one?
Probably to our fans, it does. But to us, we knew they'd be good. We know it'll be a hard game for us. We hopefully going to have a somewhat full team. So, you know, right now we're down three or four guys. So hopefully a couple of those guys will be okay to play in that. But neither one of us would push a player because of an exhibition game. If he needs to sit out, he'll sit out.
I don't feel like this is going to be the team that we see next Friday night against Kansas, because, you know, we've heard him say quite a bit over the last two or three weeks that they're dealing with some, you know, some bumps, some injuries. I feel like what we see next Friday night's not going to be anywhere near what we're going to see down the line with this basketball team.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's crazy you say next Friday night, because that's just wild to think about that it's already here. But
coming fast.
That's besides the point, obviously. But I would say you're right. I would say probably that's a two-way street as well with Kansas, too. I mean, I'm not sure, and maybe this is an indictment on myself, what Bill Self has maybe said about, you know, where they're at injury-wise and everything. But, you know, you're not going to, you know, go all in on an exhibition. You know, those are really just kind of like you said, throughout the offseason, just kind of, you know, measuring stick games. Where are we at? Where do we need to improve on before these games actually start to count?
It's going to be different. It's going to be different because Musselman went all in on the exhibition against Purdue last year. We heard them talk about how, you know, it was they treated that just like it was a real game. And I don't think Purdue, for a good bit of that game, was really prepared for the challenge that Arkansas was bringing to it, because I don't think that Purdue prepared for that game like Arkansas did.
Yeah, I mean, like, I can't really speak to that game, obviously, since I was you know, not there. But, you know, it is interesting to see just kind of, you know, how different teams take different approaches to exhibitions. Obviously, you want to win. You want to have a good showing, especially when, you know, the number one team in the country is coming to your house. But ultimately, that's not the most important thing with an exhibition. You want to, you know, highlight what you're going to do well, especially against, you know, some of those high-end teams like a Kansas or an Alabama or a Purdue. And you also want to obviously not pick up any additional injuries, which obviously none of the injuries Calipari's really talked about seem to be that major. I don't think it seems like anybody is going to miss any significant time in the season. With the exception of Lawson Blake, but he's, you know, obviously a walk-on, so he's not going to, you know, be a major factor on the court anyway. But so it is, and obviously, you know, you want to find out where you're not good or where you need to improve on. And a team like Kansas and a team like TCU, to a lesser extent, you know, those teams are going to find that and they're going to expose it. So those are really the big keys to these kind of exhibitions. And I mean, if you win, you win, that's great. But, it'll be interesting to see just where this team is at, especially against, you know, like we mentioned, the preseason number one team in the country.
I mean, you know, what the KU game is going to be about, it's going to be about, you know, getting your guys acclimated to, hey, this is what it feels like when you're trying to, you know, go low post against a guy like a Hunter Dickinson. This is what it feels like when you're trying to guard DeJuan Harris, bringing the ball up the floor. This is what it feels like rebounding against a guy like KJ Adams. I don't know that it's so much about winning and losing. If you can win, that's great. But it's going to be a lot more about the experience and about getting their feet wet. And it's not just the KU game. It's every, you know, it's a lot of early season games. Three of their first four games, if you count exhibitions, are against teams that we think are going to be pretty good. You got KU, then you've got TCU down at Dickey's Arena. They open with Lipscomb, who is kind of a sneaky good mid-major team. And then they play Baylor in Dallas at American Airlines Center. And Calipari had a pretty long soundbite here that I'm going to play about the schedule and why he put the schedule together the way he did.
And that's why I put the schedule. We play TCU on the 1st of November down in Dallas. We have Lipscomb at home. We have Baylor in Dallas. We have Illinois, Michigan, Miami, all before December 10th. Well, why are you doing that? Because we need to know where we are. What's our team? What do we have to do? Let our fans see where the team is. Here's where we are. Because right now, we're undefeated, and they're a little up in here. And I'm like, dudes, calm down. And I try to tell them, I don't have a magic wand. I'm not a magician. It's not what I do. It normally, and this made some people, oh, my gosh, it normally takes a couple years for me to get the culture right. Now, will it be less? Maybe. It may be more. But the culture has to be right. What you expect, what is unacceptable? Will they do more than expected? Do they understand we're here to help each of you, but we can't do it for you? You take what you want. You're not promised anything. You're going to play every day against really good players who are as good as you and have the same aspirations. Well, I don't want that. I want the Fugazi. Let me go somewhere where I can just go play and he'll promise me and they'll do this. And I'm going to be the only player of Fugazi. Or do you want to go? You want to go fight and take what you want. Those are the guys that comes with. They come here, the others don't, and that's fine. Because at the end of the day, this is who fights. In this league, I mean, I remember our first game down in South Carolina last year. That was a fight, and they won. They won the fight. And then we learned to fight. Then we started, we went on the road and won games then. But this thing here, this is a man's decision to play in this league.
Great soundbite there by John Calipari about the schedule that Arkansas is facing this year. Nine teams in the SEC and the AP top 25. They've got another one that's just right outside the AP top 25. This should be a very good basketball league, Anthony.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and not just the AP top 25. I mean, preseason-wise, it's rated as the top conference in the country on the KenPom metrics. I believe there's some other metrics that have it at the top as well. I mean, top to bottom, I mean, you've got a lot of very good teams, great players on every team in the league. I mean, you've got Vanderbilt, you know, picked 16th in the league. They've got a coach who's coming off a 32-win season who made the second round of the NCAA tournament last season and picked up a guy like A.J. Hogard from Michigan State who was, you know, quite good in the Big Ten. So, I mean, there's a lot to like about, you know, every team in the SEC. So, top to bottom, it is a great league. And like we mentioned, you know, John Calipari's obviously put together a schedule to prepare for that. He's put together a team to prepare for that. I mean, he's got, you know, four incoming transfers who, you know, have experience having played in the SEC, and, you know, obviously the three guys following him from Kentucky, and then Jonas Adu, and then he's got Trevin Brazil as well returning. So, I mean, everything that, you know, he's kind of put into, you know, this team, be it the roster, the schedule, the practice regimen, you know, whatever it may be, it seems to be obviously preparing for league play, because that's where it, you know, that's where the rubber really meets the road. That's when it really matters. But, yeah, no, it is going to be, you know, if not the best league in the country, it's certainly going to be, a, you know, one of the best.
With the Big 12, right?
With the Big 12.
And here's a question love that we 12. Had. Here's a question we had yesterday. Has the SEC passed the ACC in basketball? I think for a lot of old-timers, they would sit there and they would listen to that and say, there's no way. No way would the SEC ever surpass the ACC in basketball. You got North Carolina. You got Duke. You got all these programs that have – a ton of tradition, but in the here and now, it feels like the SEC has passed the ACC, which is really saying something when you think about where the, you know, the conferences were 5-7 years ago.
Yeah, I would say so. At least on paper, heading into this season and in recent seasons as well. I mean, obviously, you're getting more SEC teams in the tournament than ACC teams. But then on the flip side, you talk to somebody who's really big on the ACC, they're going to point to, okay, well, look how far the ACC teams that make the tournament have gone. Obviously, NC State, the Final Four last year. Duke and North Carolina in the Final Four together, that, you know, not that long ago. North Carolina playing for a national title. I mean, the list goes on. But, you know, I would say top to bottom, you know, I would probably give the edge to the SEC right now, especially with, you know, the ACC having, you know, 18 teams in that league now. I don't want to say backfilling because, I mean, you've got some good tradition in some of those programs like a Cal or a Stanford or an SMU. But, I mean, I would probably put, you know, the lower rung teams in the SEC above those teams, if that makes sense. But, yeah, I would say probably top to bottom, you would probably take the SEC right now. But, I mean, the top of the ACC is as good as anybody. Obviously, Duke and North Carolina, they're going to be two of the best teams in the country this season. I mean, Cooper Flagg might be the best player in the country, and he's only 17 years old. So, I mean, there's a lot to like in the ACC. I think the ACC is going to be up this year. I mean, not even – and, you know, you can cut me off at any moment if I start rambling, but I think the ACC is going to be up this year. I mean, you've got, I think, you know, especially that upper half of the league. I mean, Notre Dame was, you know, pretty bad last year. They could be a bubble team this year maybe. I mean, you've got Wake Forest, who was a bubble team that – you know, frankly, probably at least should be in the conversation to be in the top 25. I mean, you've got a lot of, you know, quality in the ACC, especially in that upper half.
We've opened up Pandora's box talking to Anthony about other conferences. Let's not get him started on the Missouri Valley. You can read Anthony's coverage at wholehogsports.com from Birmingham. A story right now that he just put up today. SEC-wide confidence high among Arkansas men's basketball coach John Calipari and others. That's a good read. A lot of good coverage from Birmingham, Anthony. And be safe on your way back up through Mississippi, and we'll see you soon.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me, and go Missouri Valley.
All right. Anthony Christensen of WholeHogSports.com. Appreciate him being with us. Also, Gina Toretta, Christina Long. And we appreciate you being here as well. We'll be back with another podcast tomorrow. We expect to have John Calipari Q&A on our podcast tomorrow. Until then, hope we'll see you at WholeHogSports.com. Have a great day, everyone.